Blog Talk Radio.
Don't Give Up Radio Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
Can y'all help me? Put your hands together. Come on. Can you hear the sound of freedom? We're free because the curse of sin has been broken. And Jesus Christ has set us free.
We have the victory. He gave us victory.
And because of that, you can lift up your voice.
I'm more than a conqueror.
I'm more than a conqueror.
you for joining us one more week for Don't Give Up Radio. I am your host, Jackie Wayans, and I'm very, very happy to be with you tonight because, you know what, we are overcomers. But the reality is, in order to be overcomers, we had to have gone through some real stuff in order to get to this place. We had to have fought through some things and dealt with some things in order to be overcomers. And tonight we're going to be speaking with Carmen Love. Yes, that is her real name, Carmen Love, author of the book They Loved with a Closed Fist. And this is actually her memoir that talks about a life of abuse from her early childhood into her young adult years and how she was able to actually break free. Now, you know my show. Obviously, she did this through tremendous faith in God. But we don't start there because all of us have to walk through the same dark paths when we're going through situations and circumstances. And so this show is designed to help you realize that though you may be going through a midnight hour right now, there is no miracle answer or magic pill that you can swallow this instant aside from your faith in God. And if that isn't a reality in your life yet, hopefully by the end of the show you'll see exactly why that's important. Carmen, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure and a privilege to be here. Thank you.
Well, you know, I was sharing with you not only your book, but you have a wonderful audio piece as well, and your voice is so soothing, and you're talking about things that are so dramatic. But, you know, that is really just the grace of God that has landed on your life to allow you to be able to talk about these things without the bitterness. And there are people who are going to be listening tonight who can't even imagine ever getting to that place. So I want to start by going back to the earliest parts of your childhood. And I want to actually start with the good times, because oftentimes when people are coming out of abusive homes, we always hear about the horrors. But to compensate or balance, sometimes there were these really beautiful moments. So did your family have, you know, any of those?
We did. And, you know, my mom was a single parent. And, you know, there were five children, and we were all a year apart. So she had her hands pretty full. And she did everything that she could do to possibly make our lives as normal and as happy as she possibly could. And just surviving off of $160 a month for five children, that was really hard for her. And of course, she relied on the system. But one thing she did for us every night, which was really important, and I looked forward to it every night, was she would gather us into the living room every night for a Bible study. And we would be sitting on the couch, and she'd sit in her favorite rocking chair, and she would, you know, open the book and show us pictures, and she would read stories, and then she had this beautiful voice, and she would sing. And then right after the Bible study, she would play hide-and-go-seek with us. So she would chase us through the house, and if we were caught, we were tickled. And she did so many other things, yeah, just to bring so much joy to the house.
Yeah, and I can see it as you're talking. You know, I can visualize it happening. And you guys were very close together, right, about 1 year apart?
We were all 1 year apart, just stair steppers. And so we were friends, too, and we argued and fought like most kids did, but there was more harmony than bad in the home. And another thing that she would do is she would, every year we were at a movie, and she would pop popcorn, and she would pass down five sandwiches and five bags of popcorn and pop and cookies, and we'd take walks together at night. She did a lot of things to try and to the home. And being a young mother herself, that was a struggle for her. She was very lonely, and she didn't have the support that she needed. And so we were sort of her joy.
I can hear that. I can hear that there. And with her telling you the Bible stories and singing to you, was there an opportunity for you to get to know the Lord personally at that age, or did that happen later on in life?
Well, that's when it all started. When we were little, it was ingrained in us, and she would speak to us about the Lord. We gave our lives to Christ at a very early age. And I can remember us all praying together every night. That was something that we were required to do every night. And we would pray together, and we would, you know, pray for my father, and because he was absent from the home. And so she instilled that in us when we were very little. And I'm so glad that she did, because it was my foundation that I built off of for all of the other stuff that was happening in my life later.
Let's talk about your father, since you bring that in. What was the relationship between your mother and father?
My father was a police officer and very well respected in the community, but at the same time, he had a problem with alcohol. He had a relationship with alcohol. And because of that, the relationship with him and my mother was always very rocky and chaotic. And they had actually divorced when we were little. But that didn't stop him from visiting the home and just bringing the fear and the chaos into the home. So it was a lot of screaming and yelling and shouting and chaos in the house during those early childhood memories that I have.
I'm sorry, I wanted to know if you could go back a little bit and paint a picture for me when you say he, late night hours, what would happen? He would just show up at the house, you know, what was the situation?
Well, I can just remember, you know, and it's so sad to have to go back, but sometimes the Lord will allow us to go back in order to move us forward. And I could just remember waking up during the night and hearing the glass shattering from the living room window. There, we had a living room window that was adjacent to the front door. And when he would come, he would show up sometimes at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And my mother wouldn't allow him to come in because he would be drunk, but he would be demanding to see his children, and it would wake us. And I remember the glass shattering, and I remember we had this nightly drill where we learned to run and hide. So we would run and hide, or I can remember my knees shaking and just, you know, calling the police, and I could hear Mom wailing and screaming and just all of my sisters and brothers just bumping into each other and trying to find a place to hide. We were so scared because we knew that he was going to either, you know, grab us and take us out of the home to try and punish her for not allowing him into the house. And it was just a lot of chaos. And this went on for many, many, many years. And that spirit of fear was planted in my life as a result of all of that.
I'm sure of that. And it's interesting to me also the contrast between what would happen within a night. You know, you have this beautiful setup with your mom singing to you and Bible stories and hide and seek in a positive way, and then at midnight being woken up and knowing that you now have to hide as a drill to kind of keep yourself from being in a dangerous situation. Was there ever a time when weapons were involved or you felt that, you know, your lives were actually in danger?
Sure. What happened was, you know, oftentimes he's a police officer, so he had a revolver, and he would remove his gun, and he would put it up to my mother's head. And I'll never forget the times where my brothers and my sister and I were standing in the kitchen, and we watched him chase her around the table, and then he put a gun up to her head, and he would vocalize he would say, you know, bang or pow to get her to jump, and we would all be screaming and begging for him to stop, but he wouldn't stop. And so there were times we would run out in the middle of the night and stand out in the street and wait for the police to come, and we had no idea what was happening to Mom in the kitchen. And I can remember my youngest brother Corey and I hiding in the attic and listening to the chaos beneath us and not knowing if we were going to hear a gun go off. And that's how I lived my life, just nervous and scared all the time. And I took that to school with me, very shy, very timid. Yeah, very isolated.
You need to cut that off and to disengage from that. And I'm listening. I'm thinking so many people who've gone through this are listening to you right now and shaking their head in agreement of in terms of the emotions, in terms of maybe even the similar responses and things that you did. How did this come to an end for your family, or did it come to an end?
it finally came to an end. And like I said, it lasted for so many years. And again, it picked up later on in the form of a sibling. But there was a detective that came to the house, and he was constantly being called to the house. And my mother actually called him that night because the police department were supportive of my father. And they actually asked my mother to stop calling them because they didn't want to get him into trouble, my father. And so she had no support. But this one detective, he decided to threaten my father, and he told him, if she calls me one more time, if I get one more call to this house, I'm going to hurt you. So he threatened to physically hurt my father. And then it kind of died down for a while. And we went years where there was no chaos, and it was just more peaceful, and Mom was able to go to school, and it was just a really peaceful environment. And we continued our Bible studies, and we continued, you know, trying to be as normal and happy as we possibly could be.
Wow, isn't it amazing? Women, I feel, and men too, but I just love hearing these stories about the moment a woman has some freedom or some liberty, she tries to educate herself or start a business or better herself in some way. And I just love you. I'm going to play a selection now, and I just think it just speaks so much to what God does for us while we're facing these hard times.
Oh, yeah.
every moment in his hands. We just have to give him thanks. And for those of you who have ever gone through a moment like described by Common Love, you know very well how much and how important it is to be in the hands of God. It is his name that we cry out to, and it's his name that we depend on when we're in these circumstances. And I find that even people who may not be churchgoers per se, when you're in such a devastating situation, you call on the name of God. And I want to let you know right now, before we go any further, that there's a wonderful, intimate relationship that you can have with the Lord as his child, where access to his protection and his peace and his joy is granted to you on a greater level. And in order to access that, it is as simple as Romans 10, 9 and 10, which says if we confess with, Romans 10, 9 and 10, if we believe in our hearts and confess with our mouth that Jesus Christ is Lord, that we shall be saved. And that's where it begins. That's where it starts. And thankfully, Carmen had this relationship with the Lord, and it got her through many hard times. We heard the first part of your story, but unfortunately, Carmen, what many people know is true, is that when women can't afford to leave or don't have resources to leave, or in the case where the abuser has great authority as being a police officer or a judge or something like that, they really can't go anywhere, that the children are left in a environment that's hostile for a long time, and they're observing behaviors that later on, despite how much they hate what it did to them and what it did to their parent, they adapt to those behaviors and they take that on themselves. And unfortunately, in your family, your oldest sibling went through that. Can you talk to me about his transformation, what he became, and how he manifested his childhood experiences?
Well, I can remember my oldest brother being such a bully. And what happened was, I believe that because he was not feeling that sense of power to be able to protect my mother, then he found his power in a negative way. And so oftentimes he would get into trouble a lot at school, and he would fight and he would bully people, and then we were bullied by him at home. And I recall a specific time, and I speak about it in my book, and it's just a time where I'll never forget it because it stays just in the forefront of my mind. My youngest brother, Corey, he and I were very close, and we were practically best friends. And Corey was about a year younger, and one day we were at home alone, and Mom was at work, and my other siblings had not yet arrived from school. And I can remember this older sibling coming into the home and being angry, and we had no idea what he was angry about, but we went on to watch television, Corey and I can just remember about an hour later hearing Corey screaming in the back room. And I raced to the back room because he was calling my name out of desperation. And I remember getting to the back of the room and nearly tripping and falling and watching him squirm. He was lying on his back, and my brother was sitting on top of him, and he was just taking his fist and just punching the life out of Corey. And I could just remember his face swelling and blood everywhere, and I felt powerless. And I was trying to pull my older brother off, and he would just shove me across the room every time I tried. And the only reason that it was broken up, just and I believe that that was just divine intervention, my oldest brother jumped up, and he ran down the hall and walked into the kitchen to get a knife. And I believe his plans were to end my brother's life that day. And while we heard the clattering of the silverware in the kitchen, I opened the bedroom window, and I pushed my youngest brother out of the window and told him to run. And I'll never forget, he was just covered with blood. And he ran, and he looked back at me, and I was staring at him in the window. And when I turned around that day, my oldest brother had returned to the room, and he was holding a butcher's knife in his hand. And he saw that my youngest brother had gotten away, and he just walked away. And I could have been killed. But because of divine intervention, nothing like that happened. And it was just one of the worst things that that ever happened that I will never forget.
no one can forget something like that. I can actually see it in my head as you're talking. And, you know, my soul is moved that, you know, no one should have to live like this or go through these things. And yet it has been happening in our society and it's still happening. And my great concern, mm-hmm. which we'll discuss a little later, is that it's still happening within the body of Christ way too much without mm-hmm. there being an effective plan on how to stop behavior. And, you know, I am reminded that about 12 years ago, I went to a woman's out loose in Georgia with a dear friend. We've known each other for a long time, very intimate with each other. We spoke about many things together. I think it was the last day of the conference, all women, about 90,000 women, and Bishop Drake said, close your eyes. And he said, basically, if you've been abused in any way, shape, or form, you know, verbal, emotional, financial, sexual, physical, stand to your feet. Whether it happened as a child, now, you know, just stand if it ever mm-hmm. happened in your life. And mm-hmm. it took a lot of courage for me to do. But I kept my eyes mm-hmm. closed and I stood. I didn't know what he was up to. And he said, open your eyes. And when I opened my eyes, about 90% of that stadium was women standing. And mm-hmm. then to my greatest surprise, the woman right next to me, who I'd known all these years, was standing. And it opened the door for us to, you know, have a conversation as we went on. But my point is to say that, you know, this is way too prevalent, and it's a seed, as we can see with your older sibling, that continues to penetrate. Now, did your mom know about this, and how did she respond?
My mother was aware of it, and it really tired her out because she was constantly getting phone calls from school because of his behavior. I'm not sure if she actually knew how to deal with the situation, but I remember her making excuses for him, and I think a lot of times mothers, they have that false sense of guilt that somehow this is their fault. And I think she carried, and I know her, even listening to her now, she still continues to carry that guilt around, and she made excuses for him, stating that he was just very angry and that he was really a good person, but just very angry, and she blamed his behavior on my father. But she never got him any help. I remember her crying. I remember her wailing on the phone when she saw my brother. My youngest brother had showed up to the hospital where she worked that day, bloodied and bruised. And when she saw him, she screamed on the phone asking me what had happened. But even that event it wasn't enough to get him some help.
Right.
And so he remained in the home with everyone, bullying everybody, and it just continued to escalate even more, unfortunately.
Yeah, so now your family is starting to relive this pattern all over again. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
we spoke earlier, and unfortunately, you know, there are patterns that are still existing within your siblings. And the only time that there can be absolute true deliverance is with the Lord, and he's been able to work with you in a wonderful way. I'm going to mm-hmm. take a break now and play another selection, because the reality is the first step to this is to get on your knees and to pray.
Mm-hmm.
What
mm-hmm.
I found, though, is that a lot of times we do that in isolation, and the power is in numbers, and we do need to find a safe place, whether it is within the family or within the church or somewhere. The Lord will open up a door for you to be able to partner with someone else in prayer so that you can start breaking the chains that your family is going through. It doesn't pay to keep it a secret, and I know that's something that I'm sure your mom must have, you know, told you guys, you know, don't tell the neighbors, or, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, keep it secret, keep it tough. And that's
mm-hmm.
not the answer. The answer is to make it known, but you have to do that in wisdom, of course, because lives
mm-hmm.
are complete.
I can't express the immediate love and joy and acceptance that I felt. However, real life was ready and waiting with some familiar and new challenges. I quickly learned the need for prayer anywhere, anytime, and every day.
But fear being locked into the same old boring style. No more worries. Come to the House of Naturals hair show and dinner extravaganza. See the elegance and versatility of natural hair. From trendy looks to glamorous color to runway fabulous. Learn how to rock your natural hairstyle. That's the House of Natural Hair Show, April 5th, Macedonia Center, Mount Vernon, New York, 8 p.m. A hair show, dinner, and live entertainment by Mighty Mystic, all for just $50. Not to mention a chance to win full-service sister love, a flat screen TV, and much more. Call for tickets today, 917-499-5689. 917-499-5689. Proceeds portions go to Goshen All Age School in Jamaica.
Don't Give Up Radio Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
All right, everybody. We've been here at the first 30 minutes or more of the show speaking with Carmen Love about her abusive past from her memoir, They Loved with a Closed Fist, and that says everything in terms of just, you know, the heart and the abuse and the nature of things. And we haven't even scratched the surface. You know, we covered the abuse that you went through with your father coming to the home and traumatizing the home, and then an older sibling taking on that behavior. And now as you mature and you're getting older yourself, I'm starting to wonder, how is it affecting you as a young woman? And I'm also wondering if you did anything to alert anyone. Did you, you know, say to your Sunday school teacher or anybody what you were going through? Did you seek that out?
You know, what's so funny is that, you know, the family system, the way it's set up is that, you know, everybody can see that big purple elephant standing in the middle of the room, but it's ignored. And I was taught to keep secrets. And what happened was I carried this fear everywhere I went. And I remember this one night when my oldest brother, the same sibling who beat my brother Corey, he came after me the same way. And I remember him beating me so badly that he disfigured my face. And I remember him kicking me so hard in my chest. And I remember staggering down a dark street late at night, just delirious. It happened so fast, and it happened so so quickly that I didn't even realize what had happened. And I can remember getting away and running away. And I remember walking down that dark street and feeling like I was all alone and not understanding why these things were happening to me. I was a very sweet, kind, compassionate young woman. And my faith in God was great at that time. But at that particular moment, I felt like I was alone. And I can remember walking to my father's house. I knew what street he lived on. I didn't know which house he lived in, but I remember walking to his home that night, and I can remember telling him what happened, and no one called the police. No one. It was almost as if I was so conditioned to keep the secret that I didn't want to get my mother into trouble, and I didn't want to get my older brother into trouble, and I was thinking about everybody else and protecting everybody else. And I was being constantly abused. And I can remember going home 2 or 3 days later, and my mother, I asked her, I said, Mom, why did you allow him to do that to me? And I remember her saying, because you deserved it. And what she didn't realize was that she was grooming me to be in an abusive relationship in the future, and she didn't even realize it.
Wow.
And so the story continues.
Yeah, clearly there were some, you know, emotional things that she never came to grips with. So even though she had faith in God, and even though her abusive cycle ended, she never shifted in her internal mind and emotions and got a proper perspective of things. And therefore, her view as moving forward and almost kind of coming to a place of accepting this as a lifestyle, not only for herself, but for her children as well.
Exactly.
I'm not trying to overwhelm our listeners, but the truth is the truth, and the reality is there's some people who go through a great deal, and I know you want to know, well, if she's serving God, why? Well, you know, how is this happening? Why is God allowing this? And we're going to begin to answer that question, but we don't want to rush to the finish line. This is going to be a two-part show. I'm going to have Carmen come back, but what I want to have her reveal right now is the fact that on top of all of this now, you were actually molested as well. Share
yes.
with us, you know, how that story went, and also let us know if you had the courage to say something when that happened.
I can remember it was a family friend, and he was in his 30s, and I was about 15 years old, and I was very timid and shy, but I had dreams, and there were certain things that I wanted to do, and I can remember going to the recruiting station to try and get into the military to try to escape the abusive household, and this was a family friend, and he was also a recruiter, and I can remember him supporting me and making me feel like I did have him there and for me. And what happened was he started groping me and molesting me. And I hid that secret for months. I couldn't tell my mother. I was so afraid that she would get angry with me because she had blamed me before for something that wasn't my fault. But it vexed me so much that I could not focus in school, and I was so afraid to be alone with him. And one day, I just remember going into the room when the house was quiet and Mom was lying on the bed and she was reading a book, and I let her know what was happening. I told her that it, you know, who was molesting me and how I felt and how scared I was of him. And I'll never forget her putting that book down and looking at me. And her response to me was, "You think that you're so cute and you think that everybody wants you." And it shocked me. And it felt like my heart had just sunk down to my feet, and I could just remember her response was more devastating than the actual molestation. And I didn't know how to handle that kind of pain. I really didn't. As a 15-year-old girl with no one to talk to, I didn't know what to do with that. And I can remember leaving the house, and I was numb inside. It was almost like I didn't have any feelings at all. And I climbed on my bicycle, and I rolled around the neighborhood several times. I couldn't even weep. I was so heartbroken. I was so hurt. I felt so betrayed by my mother because she was always there to protect us when we were little. And I didn't understand this sudden shift in her. And I can remember driving my bicycle back and forth across the street without looking. And I'm not sure if I was deliberately trying to hurt myself or if I was just in a state of mind that I just was not in control. But I can remember doing this several times, and I also remember that at that busy intersection, not one car came by or hurt me, or I didn't hear any skidding, I didn't hear anything, and I did it again, and nothing happened. And I felt ashamed that I would even do something like that. But at that moment, it was just that pain had gripped me of my mother blaming me for something that wasn't my fault, and she allowed this guy to continue to come to the home. And so I grew up believing that everything was my fault and taking responsibility for every evil, every bad thing that ever happened to me. I made it my fault because I learned at an early age that no matter what happened, if it was something that was bad, it was my fault. I was somehow to blame for it. And that's how I grew up, just, you know, carrying that false sense of guilt into my later relationships, and I ended up attracting the same types of relationships and violence.
But even right now, though, at this point of your life, being a teen, how did you cope? Because, you know, you mentioned earlier that, you know, your brother exhibited behaviors because of what you guys went through, and for him it was anger. But everyone who goes through something like that and doesn't deal with it, right, it's going to manifest itself in some way. And while you're saying to me, you know, that you were, you know, definitely this lovable young child, how did it manifest itself in you?
The way I dealt with it was I actually turned the hurt and the pain onto myself. I began to abuse myself. And what I mean by that is that I would eat and I would purge. So it was constant binging and purging. And there were times when I wouldn't eat at all, and I would starve myself because I guess I felt like at that moment that was the only thing that I could do to release my pain. And at the same time, it was the only thing that I really had control over. And I could just remember going to school so weak and surviving off of Jell-O and crackers and exercising for hours at a day, believing that if I could just be prettier, you know, then I would be accepted. If I could be this good daughter and faithful to my mother and there for her and just this good girl, that she would love me and accept me. And then there were times when I felt like if I just wasn't so pretty, then maybe these men, I wouldn't be attracting this kind of attention. So I was very confused. Very confused.
You know, we have hearts, and our hearts are fragile, and thankfully there's one person that we can always take our fragile hearts to.
it. I stayed strong for them. Oh, yes, I did. I never thought it disappeared. It's only you who keeps me strong. And I can't imagine going on without you.
Heart, and you've been through almost everything textbook that you can imagine when it comes to abusive situations. How did you get out? What was your out?
What happened was I had that inner voice constantly nudging me to continue to move forward no matter what was happening to me. I knew that I was never comfortable being someone's punching bag or being in a place I called home and having someone demean, criticize, and torment me. And I knew that there were better plans for my life than that. And that's why it's so important to understand the dynamics in your family and the roles that you played as a child, because the vicious cycle is repeated. And I believe that what doesn't kill you will make stronger if you allow it. And as uncomfortable as it may be, you know, I never fought the process, and most importantly, I never gave up. It was just never an option for me. And I eventually fell in love. I met this young boy and fell in love with him. And at that time, I really thought that God was offering me this gift from above. And this was the first time I'd ever felt loved and accepted by someone. And at the time, I was only 18 years old. And I was so happy. This was the happiest time of my life ever. And ended up getting married, and I had a child at the age of 18, and things didn't go right after a while. And I felt so devastated because he ended up abandoning me with a little girl and one on the way. And I'll never forget him telling me in my 9th month with my second child that he didn't want to be married anymore. He said that it had nothing to do with me. He just did not want to be married anymore. And I just can remember how devastated I was and wondering, again, where are you, God? And what have I done so bad and so horrific that these things just continuously come to me? I just didn't have the answers. But again, something kept nudging me to continue no matter what. And then I later found out that a rough diamond that doesn't remain under the chisel will never become a precious jewel. Mm. And so with that, just something just continued to nudge me forward, and I just continued to move forward, and I kept going. You know, in spite of the the seemingly insurmountable odds against me, I was able to keep moving forward. That small, still voice kept nudging me forward, saying that there's something better than all of this. If you just continue to pray and believe, just continue to move forward. And that's what kept me going.
You know, I love that analogy that you gave about the diamond. I've not heard it said quite like that. And you know, it is, we hear about the lump of coal in the dark place, which is true also, but to get the beautiful diamond that's in the ring setting that takes some craftsmanship and some chiseling and chipping away in order to allow the perfect part of that diamond to shine forth. And I don't want to get too metaphoric or too gloss because people are going through pain. What I'd like to do, Carmen, is have you come back next week. I'd like to hear more about your story, and I also want to get into practical advice and solutions for people who are going through this. And of course, I believe that you know, if you're in an abusive relationship that is physically abusive, and you're in danger, your children are in danger, you need to get out of that relationship. You need to separate yourself so that you're in a safe place. And I'm not talking about the demise of the family. There is a way to separate yourself and allow that person to get help if they desire that. But sometimes that isn't a desire. And therefore, you need to take yourself out of the danger and take your children out of the danger. Because as we can hear from what you're sharing, and I've heard it over and over again, and even organizations teach that children will model the exact behavior that they hate. And as you mentioned so vividly, either they will become groomed to accept abuse into their lives or become abusers. And the only way to break that really is through God and through some real counseling and work that needs to be done on the individual life. But God has a purpose and a plan, and he is our greatest comforter. So will you come back next week and continue this conversation with us?
I would love to. It would be my pleasure.
Until then, I want those of you who are listening to not give up hope. I went through a very dark time. You know, as I mentioned at the top of the show, abuse is many different things. It's verbal. It's emotional. It's financial. It's sexual. It's physical. And some of these haven't even fully been addressed yet in our society. But I went through some time myself that would just seem like forever. In fact, the track that played earlier, On My Knees, was a cover that I did from my CD, My Strength, My Song, just journaling that period of time in my life and how the Lord brought me through. It took 10 years. Thankfully, I've never been physically battered. And I don't even comprehend how you are shining like the beautiful diamond that you are today, but I'm thankful for you, and I look forward to talking to you next week. To our listeners, until next time, I want you to not give up on yourself. You are your own best hero, and how do I know this? Because the greatest hero of all gave his life for you. In the meantime, be comforted by him, and he won't let you down.